My hearing. So don't talk to me.
My name is Karen, and I'm an alcoholic. And you know, I'm way more than an alcoholic. I'm a really crazy codependent too. I heard a great talk last night at an Al-Anon meeting about insanity. And the woman who shared at that meeting happens to be here tonight. And I thought, you know, that's one of those things that we maybe never, ever escape from, those moments of insanity in our lives. And it doesn't matter if we're an alcoholic or a codependent, we still have insanity. And the 12-step program is our way through those moments of insanity. Whichever program seems to embrace us or we are embracing at the moment. And I want to start before I begin telling you a little bit. Some of you don't know my journey. I'll talk a little bit about my journey before I move into talking about peaceful avenues that we might take to not only impact our own lives, but all the lives of those we touch. Because that's become very important, I think, at this stage of the journey for all of us. So I want to, and this will make you think, oh yeah, I want this book. And this is a daily meditation book. It's laid out a little differently, but it is a daily meditation book. But this is kind of a preface to it. We are always in the right place at the right time. What a comforting idea this is. Never mind, I have to put on these glasses. These are my reading glasses. I turned 83 in July, and now I have 3 pairs of glasses. And these don't really help. So I'll try to just get this in the right damn place. What a comforting idea this is. It's one I cherish and repeat to myself often. Most of us reading this have perhaps grown accustomed to this idea, but there are days in our lives when we simply need to remember it again, repeat it often, and share the idea with others so that we keep it uppermost in our minds. Why is it that we so frequently forget the tiny, profound ideas that can keep us feeling calm and in the midst of God? I have come to believe that it's the ego that doesn't want me to remember how close at hand God is. It also doesn't want me to be at peace. Never does it want me to experience peace. I embrace the idea that my mind softly says all is well and perfect as it is. The other one screams, the other part of my mind screams, he is causing this problem, you perceive. Go after him. There are 2 voices. Fortunately, we have the capacity to choose over and over again, the voice we prefer hearing. Let's be careful today. Every moment will be offering us a choice, and that choice makes all the difference in the kind of experiences today will bring. And I really do think that that kind of sets the stage for our lives, no matter who we are and where we are on our journey. We are in the right place at the right time. And even when what we're experiencing right now feels crappy, I'm trying to not use bad words tonight because I don't know who all is listening on Zoom. I know some of you are out there on Zoom and God knows who you may be. So none of those 4-letter words you might hear me say at AA or Al-Anon are you going to hear tonight. But we are really, I cherish that idea that we are in the right place at the right time. The big book tells us that, and so do so many wise scholars, so many wise philosophers. And it has brought me so many moments of comfort. Now I want to read to you the message for today in this book. This will make this book even more exciting for you. I'm a writer, so I know what a writer should do with her books. Today, July 27th, example is the lesson that all men can read. Gilbert West. Gilbert West was a poet in the 17th century, an English poet. I'm sure it didn't occur to him that there were women too. Or he would have said that all people can read. Being an example of good for all those with whom we travel is the loving choice that God wants us to make. Not very much is asked of any of us, but acting from a place of kindness comes quickly to mind. I'm convinced that's all God hopes for us, from each one of us. The simplest response is to decide, that kindness will always be how we respond. By taking the guesswork out of our decisions, making this choice simplifies our lives. But even better, it makes our lives far more peaceful and can cause those we touch to feel the hand of peace as well. Setting the intention to be a good example for others today is an easy choice. And even better, it's one that will have a positive impact, on a multitude of people. And I really want to stress that idea. You know, when I was born, and probably the same is true for you, you had no idea that you were impacting a multitude of people. I had no idea that this journey I was about to make when I was a child, struggling to know what my part was or who I was in the family that I grew up in. I had no idea that it was all going to make sense to me one day. And it doesn't mean that you have to get to be 83 like me for it to actually make sense. But it certainly has changed for me as I have aged. Everything about life has changed for me during this period of time in recovery. And let me give you just a little backdrop as to who I was. I grew up in Indiana. There were four kids in the family. I was number three. It was a very tense family, and that might be familiar to some of you. Maybe you grew up in a family similar. It wasn't a raging alcoholic family, but it was a raging, angry family because I had a really angry dad. What I grew to understand about my dad many years later, and it was in my own recovery that I found this out, that he had been afraid every day of his life since he had been 6 years old. At the age of six, he had accidentally cut off the tips of his younger brother's fingers while mowing the lawn. And you can imagine what happened to a six-year-old. He was absolutely beaten within an inch of his life by his parents. He was bound and determined from age six that he would never make a mistake again. And it made him fearful and angry and perfectionistic. And of course, that's what he wanted from all of us. And guess what? Nobody's perfect. And so it was a family that had that kind of a sense about it all the time, that you weren't measuring up ever to what you needed to be. And he wasn't a bad person. My parents were good people. They honestly were doing the best they knew how to do. And that's one of the blessings, I think, that we all come to understand when we're on this recovery path. We come to understand that our parents really always were doing the best they could, even when the best they could was not very good. And in my household, my dad, he nearly hated my little brother. He had a nervous breakdown when he was 20. He humiliated my mother. I fought back. My two older sisters seemed to escape the humiliation some way. But I fought back. I took a stand. And so he and I were at loggerheads from the time I was a child. And then I discovered the solution to how I felt. At age 13, I took that first drink of whiskey and Coke. And holy crap, it was like, this is it. This is the solution to how I feel in this family. This is a solution to how I can make the rest of my life work. Well, as a matter of fact, as we all know, that does seem to work for a while. And from 13 until age 36, it seemed to work pretty well at times. But at the same time, I kept making wrong choices, wrong decisions, choosing wrong people. And a lot of that, I would say probably most of that, was because of the rampant codependency that I believe that I really was born with. I desperately wanted to fit in to your life. And I wanted to make sure that if I wasn't fitting in, I changed you so that then I would fit into your life. And that might be familiar to some of you. You know, I mean, it seemed as though it was just a natural thing for me as a kid to try to change myself to fit what I thought other people needed me to be, or better yet, to change them so that however I was going to be okay. Well, that doesn't work very well. And that's why alcohol became such a blessing, but not forever, but a blessing for a period of time. Because finally, I felt like I fit wherever I was. And that gave me such a sense of relief to feel as though I fit wherever I was. And some of you that might be familiar to some of you, that you went through life feeling as though you didn't fit. Well, you know, I kept choosing wrong boyfriends. I kept choosing people that I thought I could manage. Well, you know, we can never manage others. We can never control others. No matter how hard we try or how clever we are, ultimately, we cannot control somebody else. My first husband, I thought, aha, I've got him nailed. And you know why I thought I had him nailed? Because he wanted me. And I thought, aha, that's what I've been hoping for. I met him at Purdue University. We both were undergraduates at Purdue. We got married in our senior year. You know, when I think back at that period of time, how little I knew about life, how there wasn't anything about life that I really understood. All I knew was that I really wanted to feel at home where I was. At Purdue, you know, I was put on social probation because I was drinking in places I wasn't supposed to be. You know, it's amazing that I graduated because of all of the ways in which I tripped myself up and had done so throughout junior high and high school and then college. But you know what I really believe as I look back now on my life, and I hope you look back on your life in the same way, I know that I was never tripping through all of these avenues, all of these brambles, all of these tripping over all of these boulders alone, even though I always felt like I was. I know that I was always being accompanied by my higher power. I wasn't raised in a family that ever spoke of God. I don't know if that would have made things any different. You know, in my family, in fact, the only time grace was said was at a big family gatherings. And I had an uncle, my Uncle George, when he had too much to drink, which was most all the time, he would get called on around the big dining room table to say grace. And he would go on and on and on until finally somebody would say, enough, George, it's time to pass the mashed potatoes. And then Uncle George would sit down and we would begin to eat. But that was the extent for me of the kind of, it wasn't a spiritual introduction at all, nor was it really religious. It was just what happened, but with no real intent, no feeling. You know, I don't know, probably lots of you learned lots of prayers depending on the kind of upbringing and the kind of schooling you had. You know, I lived in kind of a Catholic neighborhood, and one of my best friends next door, her name was Patty, and she taught me the rosary. And I thought, oh my gosh, isn't this wonderful? I know the rosary. I don't know what I thought that was going to do for me, because it actually didn't do anything. I said to my mother, you know, maybe I could be a Catholic with Patty. And she said, well, when you grow up, if you still want to do that, that's fine. But they didn't take us off to church. You know, it was just a family, a loosely constructed family is what we were. There wasn't a sense of connection that any of us had with each other. I didn't feel a connection to my mother, certainly not to my dad, because we were at loggerheads. I never turned to my two older sisters to ask them questions about their lives and how they felt and how they looked at the world around them, or what boys looked like to them, or... And my younger brother, I always felt like I was kind of taking care of him, because he was so often verbally beat up by my dad. So it was, like I say, I don't want to paint a picture and say, oh God, Karen's family was awful, because we were doing the best we could. And you know, every bit of that is what ultimately brought me to you. So I look at all of that and I think, so there were some tough times. You know, I made some bad choices. Marrying Bill, my first husband, probably wasn't the best choice. And yet, it was the perfect choice. Remember, we are always in the right place at the right time. I just didn't know what that meant. When I married him, like I say, it was because he asked me. He asked me. And I was a senior at Purdue. And nobody else had asked me. You know, I mean, that's the kind of thinking I had. We spent our time in bars drinking and occasionally going to class. And, you know, you know, the thing about him that really attracted me, though, and I was telling my present husband this the other day, because he has a little red Infiniti convertible, cute car that he put a sticker on the back that says Tesla to fool people. That's the kind of guy I am now. But I was telling him the other day, I said, you know, I had a red convertible in my life in the past, a red Buick convertible. And he said, nobody in 59 thought a Buick convertible was a big deal. I said, I did. But Bill, my first husband, was brilliant. He was cute. You know, and he had the red Buick convertible. What more? And he asked. And that was the key. And you know, that's kind of a sad state. But I look at that, you guys, and I think, that was perfect. That was exactly the right thing at the right time. Because that was the part of the journey that I needed to be on. It was a crazy alcoholic marriage that I did not recognize as an alcoholic marriage. I mean, he drank actually more than me, that I could observe. I was always, I think, a more high-functioning alcoholic than he was. At least, he never finished his PhD, and I did, by God. Now, if that's not a high-functioning alcoholic, actually, it is. But at any rate, I didn't recognize any of those things about him. And we moved to Minnesota in 1964. That's how long I've been here, since 1964. I had been teaching school in Lafayette, at the same grade school, you guys, that I had attended as a child. And guess who the principal was? The same principal that was there when I attended Oakland School. So we moved to Minnesota so he could go to graduate school. Our life was off the rails. It was a marriage filled with alcohol and infidelities. The infidelities I knew nothing about. The alcohol I participated in. And after 12 years, he decided that it was time to leave me for somebody else. Now, wouldn't you think that after all I had gone through, it would have been, that's over. But I was devastated. And I think a lot of people who suffer from codependency, doesn't matter if you're codependent or an alcoholic, if you're codependent, you're devastated by somebody deciding to reject you for somebody else. Because after all, I thought I had held him as a hostage so securely, but I hadn't. Nobody wants to be a hostage. And you know, one of the things that I've discovered in Al-Anon, which absolutely is life-saving for any of you who don't also go to Al-Anon, I totally am a believer in being a double winner. But you know, I think that if we try to hold somebody as a hostage, guess what? We're held as a hostage too. And there's no way to feel any peace of mind when that's the situation you find yourself in. So at any rate, I ended up being rejected and feeling devastated. And what does a rejected, devastated, alcoholic woman do? Now, by this time, I was in graduate school already. You know, it's like, how all that happened was a crazy thing too. I applied while we were still together. University of Minnesota turned me down. My undergraduate record was not very good, mind you. They said, take a bunch of classes and reapply. I did and got in. That was also part of the journey that I needed to have. It had never crossed my mind, and I'm sure many of you sitting there have had experiences like this. It never crossed my mind that that's what I would do with my life one day. You know, and probably many of you are sitting there doing something with your life right now that you never in your wildest dreams thought you would be doing one day. And yet, here you are doing it. And it was all because it was meant to be part of the journey that you're here to make. So at any rate, I ended up in graduate school and falling off of bar stools as often as I could. And I kid you not, it's kind of amazing to me that I had a straight A record throughout graduate school when I spent so many of my evenings sitting in West Bank bars or at Lyle's every Sunday night on Hennepin and Franklin, saying, I'm not going to go there this Sunday night. And guess what? Every Sunday night, I'd be at Lyle's. And that was simply the story of my life until I had one final bad relationship. And that was the door that opened, that led me truly to the pathway that made all the rest of my life possible. It was suggested by a counselor that I go to Al-Anon. And I walked into an Al-Anon on Mount Curve Avenue at the Unitarian Society in 1974. And I went in and I sat down and I, mind you, I had spent my whole life going into gatherings of people, and if I didn't know anybody, I was totally uncomfortable until I had a drink. I went in and sat down and I knew nobody. It was a room of men and women, and I felt absolutely comfortable. I looked around and everybody was smiling and had that loving, it had that loving atmosphere that I had never experienced, not as a child in my family. And I don't think I was unloved, but it was a family that didn't know how to connect in a loving way. These people at the Unitarian Society on Mount Curve didn't know me from Adam, but they knew how to connect with me in a loving way. They knew that I had a story probably similar to theirs. And as I sat there and listened, it absolutely took my breath away. I thought, this is where I need to be again and again. And they sent me home with, and I've told this story, some of you have heard it, they sent me home that first night with One Day at a Time in Al-Anon. I'd never seen a daily meditation book in my life, which is kind of laughable after having written so many now. But I went home that night with that book and I thought, oh, this is a no-brainer. I mean, you know, after all, I'm in graduate school. How, what can be hard about this little book? And I read it from cover to cover and I thought, I've got this figured out. I'll have him wrapped around my finger in no time. I went back to the meeting the next week and everybody was the same happy group. And they said, how are you? And I said, I'm just fine. I finished the book. And then they told me what we always tell newcomers, keep coming back. And I did. But you know, then my journey went off the road, off the rails again, like alcoholic journeys do. Just because I was going to Al-Anon didn't mean I quit drinking. So I was off the rails a lot. And again, a counselor said, your life needs to change. I think you need to go to AA. And all of this is really the precursor to my finding a way to living a more peaceful life. I went to my first AA meeting May 24th, 1976. And it was at St. Paul Episcopal Church by Lake of the Isles. And I've never had a drink since. I've never had a drug since. Nor has the idea of even having them crossed my mind. And you know, that's what's so incredible about how being touched by God really changes us. Now, mind you, I had been touched by God ever since I was a baby, before I was born. Clear up until I was 36 and went into that first AA meeting. I had not ever been untouched by that presence. I just didn't know it. And that's what's so incredible when you begin to realize that the presence was always there. God doesn't need us to know he or she is there, because they're within us. They're simply there. They can't be anyplace else. And that's what's so amazing, to finally be introduced to that idea and to know that that's where my safety, that's where my guidance, that's where my security is. That's where all my answers are. After going to that first meeting, and I must tell you that that first meeting, I walked in And I looked around and there were like 200 people, more than half men. And I thought to myself, holy crap, this is where I should have been all along. Honest to God, look at all these good looking men. And every one of them is probably just waiting to meet me. I mean, that's how out of touch I was. But you know, the reality, and one guy came up to me and he said, "Now I noticed you were in the newcomers group. Now you be sure and come back next week." And I thought that was the invitation of a lifetime. But you know, the important thing about that, I don't know if that's the only reason I went back that next week. It played a role, it honestly did. But you know, the fact that it happened and that I was there and I saw the magic of the moment, that's what it felt like. And absolutely, the thought of taking another drink was simply off my radar screen. When I went into my apartment that night, I had a big bottle of Jack Daniels, which I had had in my apartment for years, every night. And was there any desire to drink it? No. It was completely over. It was like I had been born anew with that experience. Now, I would like to say that from then on, everything was easy. I was on Easy Street, and that peace was absolutely, I was embraced by peace all the time, and I was an example of peace every place I went. That would be a total lie. I loved AA. I loved the friendships I was making. I loved what it was doing for me. But I realized that everybody seemed to have a connection or felt a connection to a higher power that I simply didn't feel. And I didn't know how they did it. You know, I'd go to a meeting, to a gathering, and I would feel so connected and I would walk out. And it was as though that the connection would be gone. And I, for about an hour and a half, what time is it?
Almost 4:00.
Oh my gosh. Never mind. You've heard enough of my story. Now I want to get on to cultivating peace. Because it doesn't sound like up to now I had a very peaceful journey. But what I want to say, even though it doesn't sound like the journey was very peaceful, I do want to tell you, and no matter where you are on your journey, it is leading you exactly to where you need to be. And that can give us a sense of well-being and peace. I have come to believe that every experience we have ever had in our lives, God was driving the bus. I just want to share with you a few of these ideas that are so important to me that I've written about in some of my books. And these are just shorthand little ideas, but they're little nuggets that hopefully will help you. You don't need to hear about the fact that at 18 months, I was ready to commit suicide. I didn't, but I met the perfect person who then led me right to where I needed to be. And that's what always happened. She was driving the bus. She knocked on my door and was driving the bus. She was sent by God. And I believe that every experience we have has happened that way, has materialized that way. Never, ever doubt that whomever you are encountering is the perfect partner for the lesson you need at that moment in time. Now, if you think back on your life, on all the lessons you've had, and some of them you think, ooh, that was such an awful lesson, it brought you to that next doorway that you needed to go through. And that's what we need to be grateful for. You know, Carolyn Mace, a great spiritual intuitive, wrote a great book called Sacred Contracts. And she talks about in that book that before we arrive here in this existence, we make a contract with every person we're going to ultimately encounter for a lesson that we both need to share. I find that very comforting. It explains a lot to me when I look over the vast journey I have had. You know, one of the things that has been so important to me too is to remember that every argument that we have with somebody else, and we are all having arguments, in the midst of an argument, there is no peace. Somebody is afraid. Every argument is expressing fear for one person or another. You know, one of the things, and Trish mentioned this, I've been a student of and a facilitator, a teacher of A Course in Miracles for many decades now, and have written a couple of books related to A Course in Miracles. And A Course in Miracles says there's two expressions, one is love and one is fear. And we are always in the midst of expressing one or the other. And when somebody is acting out or being angry, they're simply afraid. And our best response is to be kind and loving. So everything always comes back to being kind and loving and gentle in every moment that we have with others. And then we are really adding peace to this big universe that we are sharing with nearly 8 billion other people. The Course says, and I so agree, every loving thought is true. Everything else is an appeal for healing and help. So if you are encountering somebody who is acting like a jackass, be kind, be loving to them, because that's the only thing that's going on. You know, Mother Teresa, and this, I love this, and I come back to this in my own mind again and again. Mother Teresa said, be kind to everyone and start with the person standing next to you. You know, that's such a simple, simple reminder. You know, there is a man that comes to, I hope you'll forgive me for blowing my nose. Right into the Bible. And I was an old school teacher, so what do you do with the Kleenex? You stick it up your sleeve. When Mother Teresa said, be kind to everyone and start with the person standing next to you, do you realize if we all just did were loving and kind one time a day to a total stranger, how that might cultivate greater peace throughout the universe? There are so many simple actions that we can take. You know, one of the most incredible things I've learned on my journey is what I learned in Al-Anon about detachment. You know, when I came into Al-Anon, I could not have defined detachment for you. Detachment, I think, is one of the most powerful pathways to peace of mind that any of us can embrace. Because detachment doesn't mean indifference. It doesn't mean pushing people away. It doesn't mean any of that. It means just, you know, stepping aside of the mirror, letting somebody else have whatever that journey is that they need to have. We don't have to interfere. That's not why we are encountering each other. We're encountering each other to be loving and kind and helpful. You know, there's a prayer that I love that too comes, and it's consistent with everything we learn in AA and Al-Anon. This one happens to come at the beginning of A Course in Miracles, but it says, I'm here only to be truly helpful. I'm here to represent him who sent me. I do not have to worry about what to say or what to do, because he who sent me will direct me. I am content to be wherever he chooses, knowing he goes there with me. I will be healed as I let him teach me to heal. We're in this universe to heal and help others heal. That's why we come together. You know, one of the things that I have come to appreciate is that even though we feel so separate from each other, we are really all part of the one whole thing that becomes God. You know, it is said that, and you read this in so many places, God is would be incomplete without any one of us, without every one of us. God would be incomplete. You know, when you just hang on to an idea like that, it allows you to look at that person in front of you at the grocery that you're thinking, oh, why is he taking so long? He's as necessary as are you. And let's change how we look at things. You know, when I find myself agitated, and this is one of the easiest, most gratifying keys to peace of mind that I have ever, ever been exposed to, was the idea of just simply saying to God within the presence around us, help me see this differently. Help me look at this situation from a different perspective. Help me realize that we're all just trying to do the best we can. You know, there's a man that goes to one of my meetings in Naples, which I may never see him again since we, due to a lot of health challenges, we sold our house in Naples the end of February. But this man had 55 years in AA, and he was so wise. And one Saturday morning, he said, you know, my prayer every morning is that I simply don't do or say anything that diminishes somebody else. And there was something about the way he said that and the way that hit me. It's not that we don't hear that in other ways, but there was something about that word diminish that just touched me in a way that I just savored as a new way of looking at my life. And how many times a day do I still do things that diminish? I certainly haven't become perfect, you know? And God has no expectation of perfection. We're all on a journey, but all we have to do is to learn to be the gift of peace in somebody else's life. And the one thing you could do so simply is begin to appreciate every single person that you see in the same way that your dog, if you have one, appreciates you every time he sees you. You know, my dog is Nellie. She's a 7-year-old yellow lab. Honest to God, she loves my husband more than me, I must admit. But she loves us both so much. It's such unconditional love and to be so appreciated by her and to appreciate others in that same way. There's nothing difficult about that, you guys. There's nothing difficult about any of these ideas. You know, just go out there and say, I can be a better me. I can bring a better me to the party today. I can bring a better me in the traffic that I'm in, at the grocery, at the post office, at every meeting I go to. I can be a better me, because we do not know what impact we might be having on that person we are encountering. But you can believe that we are having an impact. And so let's make it a loving impact. As I was referring to detachment a moment ago, I wanted to go back to that for just a moment, because I think that, as I said, when I came into Al-Anon, I could not have defined that word for you. And as I began to grasp it a little bit, it still felt like it was kind of pushing somebody aside. And that's not love. Love is letting everybody else have the journey they were born to have. And it's my job to appreciate whatever that journey is. And to know that if we have encountered each other, it's because we need to appreciate one another's journey. We need to help each other on that journey. It's not an accident we've met each other. There are no accidental visitors on your path. They are there by design. And when we can just embrace that idea that everybody is there by design, we can move so much more smoothly, so much more confidently through the day. And all we have to do is to say, how can I be of help to you today? What can I bring to you today to make your day better? You know, I think that before I really understood what love meant, I think I was afraid of that idea, thinking, well, it meant I was just taking care of other people. That isn't what it means. It just really means, how can I be a loving presence? That doesn't mean I'm going to change you or try to change you or do something for you you need to do for yourself. But look on with love. Look on with appreciation. And simply be willing to be that listener that we all need in our lives. Life is short, you guys. Boy, I tell you, I know. I mean, I turned 83 July 18th, and it's hard for me to believe that 83 years have gone by this fast. And for sure, who knows how many years there are left, but I know that I want to make every moment of these remaining years as quietly peaceful for myself as I can. And that means I need to be kind to you. Because if I'm not kind to you, it doesn't feel good to me inside. You know how it feels if you're acting in a unkind, crappy. See, you notice I'm using good language tonight. You know how that feels inside. It feels as bad to you as it does to that other person. Life is too short. I realize now how doggone short life is. These 46 years, almost 48 years since I went into that first Al-Anon meeting, I tell you, you guys, they just were gone like that. At this stage, and I don't feel, I don't mean to sound maudlin about it, you know? I mean, I may live to be 110, who knows? I kind of doubt it, but however many, but it's not even about the years or the days, it's about the moments. Each moment is all we have. Each moment, make it good. Not only for you, but for someone else. That's where your peace will come from. We can change this world around us. And you know, right now, with all that's happening out there, it feels like it's a good time to begin. And I just want to thank you all for being here tonight and making this a great experience for me. And I don't know how much time we have for questions, but I don't know if I have the answers. What time is it? I can't see the clock.
It's 8:00.
It's 8:00. If there are